Hello, and welcome to Open for Questions at the White House. Today we're talking about the America Invents Act, a bill that President Obama signed into law just hours ago. I'm here with U.S. Chief Technology Officer Anish Chopra and U.S. Patent and Trademark Office Director David Kapos. Throughout the day, you've been sending us your questions through Facebook and Twitter. You can send questions live. Just use hashtag WHChat on Twitter or visit the White House Facebook page. And now I'll turn it to Anish, who's going to, Anish and David, for a brief intro before we get to your questions.
Thank you very much. We want to get to your questions right away, but bear with me for a few minutes as I frame the excitement today on the strategy for American innovation that has delivered some tangible results in the signing of the America Invents Act. Earlier today, the president was at Thomas Jefferson High School, named for our third president of the United States. Thomas Jefferson had another title. He happened to have been our first, wasn't at the time called the Patent and Trademark Office, but he effectively was Dave Kapos in an earlier life. So it was very appropriate for us to visit with that high school where we met students that actually have patents that they're hoping to commercialize, very appropriate for the discussion of jobs and industries of the future. It's important to talk about this in the context of the president's speech to the joint session of Congress, where we spoke about the American Jobs Act and the importance of getting American people back to work. And one of the areas that we've seen a linkage between our economy and opportunities for direct employment is in intellectual property intensive industries. These are sectors of the American economy where great ideas in a lab, in someone's mind, two kids in a garage, have turned into Fortune 500 companies because they've had the strength of the American patent system behind them to build out the products and services and to benefit economically from their creativity and from their ingenuity. This is a system that has been in need of reform going back nearly 50 years. It hadn't been seriously overhauled since 1952. And over the past decade or so, a group of stakeholders in the Congress and in the private sector had been working on a strategy to move this forward. Well, today we were pleased that the president had pushed for this over the last several years, and under the leadership of Dave Kapos, he was able to sign the America Invents Act. This is part of the president's overall strategy for American innovation, a strategy that calls on the American people to celebrate when we invest in our building blocks, our human capital, our research and development assets, our capacity as a country to connect, whether it be our broadband infrastructure or now our wireless technologies, to make sure that we have the right rules of the road so that we promote and support high growth entrepreneurs. And in that context, you've seen the work that we've done today with the American Invents Act. With that, I'd like to hand the ball over to Dave Kapos to give you a little bit more detail on the benefits of this program for your questions.
Yeah, well, thanks very much, Anish. So, you know, the America Invents Act, long time in the making, came about, as Anish mentioned, just today through tremendous leadership from the President of the United States. Lots of work, bipartisan work on the part of members of Congress. Really celebratory jobs legislation for our country. What the America Invents Act does for inventors, individual inventors and small business inventors, growing company inventors, and even large company inventors, Americans of all walks who are creative people, is it for the first time takes a system and makes it a vehicle, a friend of collaboration, a friend of innovation, and leapfrogs the U.S. to have our world's first 21st century patent system. So we'll talk, I'm sure, through the questions about some of the individual provisions of the legislation. The change to the so-called first inventor to file system, the so-called post-grant processes that enable us at the USPTO to take a second look at patents we've granted when we might have made a mistake on them, the third-party submission of prior art provisions, which are an important vehicle for technology experts all over the country to get involved in the patent process and to help us out at the USPTO and to submit documentation and comments that can enable us to do a better job. And the provisions go on and on and on, not the least of which is the ability for the agency for the first time to set fees in a rational way that reflects the cost of doing our work and to use those fees in order to process the patent and trademark applications that many folks, I think, on this meeting are submitting to the USPTO, and literally hundreds of thousands of other inventors are submitting. So it's a great piece of legislation, and I think I'll stop there so we can have plenty of time for discussion.
Great. So we want to get to, our goal is to get to as many of your questions today as we can, so let's get to the first one. This comes via Twitter from Akshay Narayan, who expresses concern that the first-to-file emphasis helps large companies and not small ones. Is this true, and why?
Well, okay, Anish, I'll help with this question. The first inventor to file provision, in my view, is decidedly pro-independent inventor and pro-small company and pro-small business. And in fact, there were a number of independent inventors and CEOs of small businesses who attended and participated in the ceremonies today to make the point that this legislation is going to accelerate their business prospects, especially the first inventor to file provision. And the reason it does that is because for the first time, it enables independent inventors to get in, file a patent application, and have assurance, certainty at that point for all points forward that they are going to be the one to get the patent. Nobody else is going to come in later, right, file a patent application and claim to have invented it earlier. Now, I know there have been concerns. It's my job to help and make this legislation as helpful as it possibly can be to our independent vendors and especially our small businesses. We know, Anish and I live every day, that it's small business in this country that creates two-thirds of the jobs. We get that. Our job is to make sure this legislation is successful for small businesses. As to the first inventor to file provision, it will be very helpful to small businesses because small businesses and independent inventors profit from certainty, from clarity, from simplicity, and that's what this provision is about. Now, the one other thing I'll mention there is there has been some concern expressed about whether the change to first inventor to file will force particularly independent inventors and small businesses to file more patent applications or to file them preemptively in a so-called race to the patent office. I really don't believe that's the case. I really don't believe that's at all necessary. And what is your advantage, all of our advantages in the US patent system, is the existence of the provisional filing capability. It was very inexpensive, a little over $100. You can quickly and easily file a provisional patent application. You don't have to go out, spend a lot of money, deal with a lot of issues, pay for legal fees and all of that. By filing provisional applications, you get your mark there, you get your stake set, you can have a year to go out, work further on commercializing your invention, whatever you need to do, and you've got the assurance that you're going to be able to pick that up, convert it to a regular application after a year, and move right through the USPTO. So I think the first inventor to file provision really is transformative in a positive way for the small and independent inventor community. One other thing I'll say is that we're now moving into implementation mode with this legislation. And it is our mandate to provide for all of the US innovation community, but especially for independent inventors and small businesses, the education, the resources, the knowledge, the information, the guidance, so that you can profit from this legislation, you can adapt to it, you can use it, implement it very, very quickly. And I thought, if it's okay,
yes, you may.
I'll provide the link to USPTO resources that are already available, and we are going to be supplementing them in a massive way as we move forward with implementation. You can find them at www.uspto.gov/AmericaInventsAct. Of course, AmericaInventsAct.
Thanks,
all right, that's enough.
Well, and that actually answered our next question from Sarah Ferguson via Twitter, who said, where can I get more info? My students are doing an invention project, great real-world tie-in. So is there anywhere else where Sarah and her students can get
yes.
more information?
Yeah, so a couple things, and Anish may have some comments also. So first of all, in addition to what I mentioned, we also have reserved an 800 number. I believe it's 1-800 AIA Help, if I recall right. It's soon going to be manned by USPTO professionals who will answer your questions. And was it Sarah that had the question? Sarah, particularly if you're a teacher or a student, please, right, get involved. You can call into the AIA helpline. You can use materials on our website. We're going to be putting massive educational materials, including for kids. We think that all kids in this country, young kids, 5, 6, 7 years old, bigger kids in grade school, high school, and even, well, kids like the rest of us need to know about the American invention system and the AIA and benefit from it. So please get involved and let us know at USPTO directly. You can get on that website that I mentioned. You can send us an email, particularly if you're in a school, if you're a student or a teacher. We will help you. We'll actually get our professionals involved to help you understand and submit inventions and patent applications like the kids at TJ High School.
I would make just one observation, and I think it's important for those in the audience who are either patent attorneys or have colleagues or friends that are in the ecosystem. We met a group of high school kids from Manchester, New Hampshire, if you remember this, Dave, who have patented a steering wheel that was capable of alerting you if you were at risk or unsafe in your driving practices. They had found volunteer attorneys who thought to mentor them as they entered the patent and trademark system for the first time. I think we're going to have that same spirit for the students and the teachers, that for the community of lawyers that are out there in neighborhood by neighborhood. Remember, our president has been focused on grassroots change, change from the bottom up. We'll do our part to provide the content and the information that you need, but we really need to count on the lawyers and the folks on the ground to chat with the schools, get the kids involved, and really help to facilitate that education. That'll really need an all-hands-on-deck approach to get us prepared for this 21st century approach.
Great, so now we have one from Facebook from George Harden, which is, what is this going to cost? Will this require a tax to support the program?
Oh, George, great question. Thank you very much. The answer is absolutely not. Absolutely not. The USPTO is a fully user fee funded agency. We take $0.00, not a single dime, from the US Treasury. Everything we spend is collected in user fees provided by applicants to the US patent system. That will continue to be the case. We will not take a single dime from the US Treasury. Now, how will fees change? We now have the ability to set fees, the statutory authority to set fees at the USPTO, with plenty of oversight from Congress and plenty of input from the inventor community and the US innovation community. My plan is to move forward with a very deliberative process, taking lots of input. Some fees will change, other fees won't change. We do plan to provide, importantly, a brand new discount of 75%. We've been authorized by Congress now to provide what's called a microentity discount, which will be 75% for individual applicants and small businesses that meet some requirements. Again, you can find those in legislation or you can find information about them on our website. So we're going to be offering some massive discounts. We also have an existing, what's called small entity discount, which is applicable to modest-sized companies, I think up to a few hundred people in general, with some revenue limitations that are quite sizable. Those folks get a 50% discount, and it's really the big entities that carry the freight and pay the full fees. While we will be changing fees, don't look for fees to change for at least a year, probably close to 18 months, because that's the amount of time it's going to take to go through the fee setting process. So there'll be plenty of time to participate and offer input.
And I might add that the user community has been very supportive of this process, in large part because they want the patent and trademark system to have the resources it needs to get the job done without burdening the broad tax base of the American people. And the community is willing to engage in this process very much so, because it's a win-win-win for everyone. We do not burden the taxpayers. We facilitate resources to their highest and best use, that is to work their way through the patents that have the potential to create the jobs and industries of the future. And we provide, in statutory authority, differential pricing based on key priority areas. And I will just say, on behalf of the executive branch, having a nimble entrepreneurial patent and trademark office in a leader like Dave Kappos, who's already demonstrated that he can make judgments, learn from them, push forward in different and creative ways. Now he's got the tools that he needs to be able to accomplish that. We're going to be expecting a lot out of him, and he'll be stepping up to the plate.
Good. Thanks, Neesh.
Okay, our next one again comes from Twitter, from Big Chillin, who says,
Big Chillin.
A friend of yours?
Yeah, Big Papa.
How much time does this actually save when trying to get an invention on the market?
Well, Chillin, great question. So a couple of parts to the answer. Number one, having the ability to set fees, keep access to the fees that we collect, coupled with the simplifications that are in the America Invents Act, will be transformative to the USPTO in that important metric, which is the amount of time it takes to process a patent application. I'll give you the current statistics, and then I'll tell you how much better they're now going to get. You can watch along on the USPTO's website in our dashboard, which Neesh was helpful in championing us creating in the first place. It's totally transparent to look at our metrics as they move every month. Currently, I'll start out with, when our administration started, when President Obama took the oath of office, it took over 3 years, in fact, somewhere around 38 months on average, to get a patent in the US. Okay, we've managed to whittle some time off of that number. The last I checked, it was down to something like 33 to 34 months. So we've whittled several months off of it, right? We've made some progress, but to be quite candid, we've got a long way to go, right? Our mandate, directed by the president, is to take that number, the time it takes to get a patent, all the way down to 20 months, just a little over a year and a half, right? So we've got a long way to go. Again, fair to say we're making progress, but we're going to do more. Another measure of that issue of how long it takes to get a patent is what's referred to as the backlog. The backlog refers to the number of unexamined applications we have sitting in our agency. When President Obama took the oath of office, that number sat at somewhere around 770,000 unexamined applications. Atrocious, absolutely unacceptable, as the president himself has said. Again, we've managed to whittle that number down. The last I looked, it was somewhere around 675,000. So we've taken about an entire 100,000 applications off that number. That's some pretty good progress. Again, we've got a long way to go, being totally honest. Totally candid to say, we're going to take that number down to about 350,000, which represents a working inventory like any business would have. Now, the one other thing I need to say is that, importantly, the America Invents Act has a new provision in it. It's very important to the president that enables immediately, actually starting 10 days from today, statutorily, I signed literally this morning the paperwork to implement 10 days from today that will, for the first time in our country's history, permit anyone for just payment of a fee to submit a patent application and have it examined and completed in less than a year. That is light speed for a complex process like processing a patent application. So simply payment of a fee. And again, that fee will be discounted for small entities, 50%, and discounted for micro entities, 75%, as we go through this fee setting process. You'll be able to get an initial response for us within 3 months or so, and final conclusion of your patent application in a year or less. Far and away the fastest in the world, and we're committed to making that system work. Very important for small entities and independent inventors who need their patent in order to go out, secure their estate, get the funding they need, build their business on top of that estate, and look for that process starting in 10 days. So if you're thinking about submitting a patent application, get it ready to go and put it in under what's now called Track 1, our super fast processing.
Big Chillin, I want to add one more comment to this, and I like calling you out, Big Chillin. This is not just about the averages and the numbers. I visited a group of clean energy entrepreneurs. Dave had piloted an initiative to sort of fast track, if you will, clean energy intellectual property applications, patent applications. And I met a couple of startup executives who thanked the administration for this opportunity because they were able to get their patents in 4 months and then have that be available to secure their Series B financing. That is, their investors, the venture capitalists, acknowledging that the applications had been granted, had greater certainty that they could put capital behind the idea and to take that to market. So it's not just the concepts here, but you're seeing it already in early phases because of the experimentation that had been done in clean energy. And Dave, if you don't mind, I'm going to invoke this. Speed is only one metric, but perhaps quality is just as important. So it's great, not about us just saying yes to every random application that comes in. In fact, quite the opposite. We have some very, very important provisions around quality. I'll just share the one that I'm particularly excited about in the open government domain. One of the points that Dave mentioned at the beginning of this live stream was the ability to invite those with expertise to contribute prior art to support the patent examiner in reviewing the applications in real time. So if someone says, gee, this looks pretty new and interesting and creative, and I think it deserves some support for an application. Today, the tool set available to the examiner are the tools that we have, you know, using the resources online and elsewhere to find the information to make judgments. This allows, and Dave will amplify more than I'm able to describe it, allows that system of expert consultation to come in to help the patent examiner make the decision that's right for the application in a timely manner. And there are other elements for quality, if you would be so kind.
Yeah, sure.
Big Chillin opened up a big opportunity
for
us.
Yeah, thanks again, Big Chillin. So Anish is exactly right. And I should have mentioned it myself. The quality is the sine qua non. It is the basis for a patent system. If you don't have quality, you don't have anything. And it's certainly my mandate to ensure that our agency is improving its quality, strengthening its quality as we move forward. As Anish mentioned, this third-party submission provision is wonderful. It's absolutely transformative. And frankly, I refer to it as the internet meets the USPTO, right? It's for the first time ever, an opportunity for technologists anywhere in the country, actually anywhere in the world, to submit prior art documents, documents that describe technology, along with commentary that relates them to the specific applications that we're considering in the USPTO. That will go straight to the examiner, who's got that very application sitting on her or his desk, who will then be able to look at the prior art that's been submitted, look at the comments, and gain value from them in examining the patent application. This is a huge opportunity, huge advantage. You can imagine if you're an examiner, no matter how smart you are, sitting at our agency, right, looking at some brand new technology, you can't possibly have access to everything, right? And you don't know what you don't know. There's always that problem. Having the ability to accept for the first time ever prior art commentary from experienced technologists is going to be huge for us. One other thing I'll say relative to quality is that we've done a number of other things in this legislation, a number of other provisions, which I think are going to be really important. I mentioned just in my opening comments the so-called post-grant review provisions. Those are fundamentally quality provisions because they're a backstop on the patent process. Patents are, of course, very complex documents. We're going to process several hundred thousand of them this year. We'll receive over 500,000 new patent applications this year. So you're talking very big numbers. Of course, when you've got technologists and lawyers looking at complex technology legal documents and making complex judgments, not everyone is going to come out perfect in the end. And so you need a backstop in a complex system like this one. And the new so-called post-grant provisions are a great backstop. And those are going to enable us to really imbue quality quickly and inexpensively so that patentees don't have to go to court in order to be able to sustain a challenge to their patents, and so that manufacturing businesses don't have to go to court when they want to come in and say to us, look, we think you made a mistake here and you need to go back and take a second look. So those post-grant review provisions are a really important quality check. Big Chillin, great question.
And just a reminder, please send your questions live, we'll answer them as they come in. Send them to the White House Facebook page or just use hashtag WHChat on Twitter. And we have one here. You answered, I think, a piece of this earlier, but Icewing7 on Twitter is worried that a small investor will have to pay more to submit a patent.
Is that Ice Wing 7?
Ice Wing 7.
Ice Wing 7.
The Iceman.
Yeah, yeah, cool. We could combine those last two, Big Chillin' Ice Wing. Okay, so I think I already basically answered this. Fees for micro entities will clearly be a lot lower because you're going to get a 75% discount now. Initially, fees for even small entities are going to remain the same. After we reset fees, frankly, I don't know right now if fees are going to go up or down because we've got to go through the process. But one other thing that I'll mention, it's really important, and you know, Nish may also have comments coming from a business perspective, is we're also going to be putting in place, in addition to track one of course implies other tracks, we're going to be putting in place something called track three, which is going to enable innovators, including independent inventors and small businesses, to actually submit a patent application and have us essentially put it on hold for a while. And that can be important if you want to focus on your marketing plan, if you want to focus on further developing your business prospects, if you just want to market test the product and see if it's going to sell, if you want to go any further with it. We're going to be accepting those Track 3 applications for a very low fee. So you've got the provisional filing process, which I mentioned before, is very inexpensive. Now you're going to have a so-called Track 3 that's also going to be very inexpensive. And importantly, Track 3 is going to enable you to save on legal fees. It turns out when you file for a patent application, if you use a lawyer, which most folks do, it's a lot of money. The fees, you're talking hundreds of dollars. The statutory fees that our office charges, hundreds of dollars. The legal fees, paying lawyers, very expensive, usually many thousands of dollars, right? By using Track 3, you'll be able to have the application set aside so you can do other work and not spend a lot of money on expensive legal fees or, frankly, other fees in our agency until you're sure the invention is worth pursuing. And that way, you're able to target your work more effectively and spend your time on patent applications that are really important to you, and you're able to direct our resources in the government so that we're doing work that is important to you and not work that, frankly, in the end doesn't go anywhere.
Danielle, I might take this as an opportunity to lift up just slightly, because these are common questions that are coming in, and I want to think about a way to lift it up to describe why I believe this is the right call to improve the lot in life for those in the small to micro enterprise category. It's not just the cost of filing and addressing, whether it's Track 3 or provisional patents. These are specific pathways that Dave is describing. But if you lift it up for a moment, today's system, you submit your application, maybe you get approved, but then you face this legal risk. Someone challenges you, and then you're in the legal system. I don't know how many people appreciate the costs of engaging in the legal system. My memory, Dave, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, is the typical complaint that makes its way into that system could cost someone $500,000 before it's resolved. So just think about this for a minute. You're a startup. You think you've done something novel. You move forward. You get the approvals from the Patent and Trademark Office in the current world. And then you're hit with a lawsuit questioning whether or not what you've done makes sense. And now you're tied up in litigation. And that process can be extremely costly. It takes a very, very long time, creates massive amounts of uncertainty. And what we've effectively done is move that from an ad hoc legal environment to a professionally run process that is controlled and designed with the expertise in mind, as Dave described, the post-grant review and others. So the net effect of all of this to the entrepreneurs out in the audience who are paying attention, is wondering, what does this mean for me? Why, what, how, where? Let me be very clear. There will always be people who question whether or not what you've done is truly novel. Would you rather fight that out in a court where you've got uncertain resources on your side to go against whomever is coming against you on the other? Or would you rather have the opportunity to engage in a professional approach with provisions like first inventor to file that gives you some more certainty and some more clarity, and the ability to engage in the back and forth on whether or not what you've done is truly novel or not? I believe the broader story here is that we've simplified, created more certainty and clarity, and professionalized, if you will, the expertise necessary to render these judgments And that is what this system entails. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's exactly right, Anish. I'm not going to add anything because you put it perfectly.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I want to open it back up
to Anish. Fire round.
Okay.
Big chillin', ice making, fire smoking. .com.
We have another one on Twitter here from Jeremiah Lee, who's worried specifically about the effect that this act will have on software patents.
Well, okay, we can certainly talk about that. You know, the legislation is not in any way sort of directed towards software patents. It's directed toward the whole patent system. You know, we recently had an important decision from the Supreme Court, a case called Bilski, the United States Supreme Court, that clarified the law that affects software patents in many ways and that settled that down. We're off implementing that Supreme Court guidance at the USPTO. And I think that we're, you know, we certainly grant patents relating to software-related inventions. We reject many associated patent applications also. Historically, it's been a challenging area, but I think it's fair to say that the area has settled down quite a bit as more prior art has become available to the agency, the lexicon, the terminology has settled down somewhat, and I think we're prepared to move forward with the legislation relative to software patents, software applications, and every other application. The one other thing I'll mention is that there is a provision built into the legislation, I think it's called Section 18, that specifically directs the USPTO relative to business method patents. For a limited period of time, a limited number of years, we're going to have a mandate at the request of third parties to take a second look at some of the business method patents that we granted. And now those aren't quite the same thing as software-related patents, but acknowledgedly, clearly there's some amount of overlap there. I think that's actually a very good provision, an important part of the law, because the law of business method patents has changed an awful lot over the last 10, 12 years, 14 years actually. And the courts have changed the law. And what that's meant is that a lot of patents that we granted now need to be looked at differently than when we originally granted them. This provision, to Anish's point before, is going to enable you, whether you are a software patent owner or a third party that's concerned about someone else's software patent, come back into the USPTO, very little money, quickly, within a year, we will be providing a view as to whether, a decision, as to whether the patent was correctly granted or not, or we'll be changing the claims around of the patent if we need to do that. If you're a patent owner, there is nothing more powerful than getting that gold stamp of approval, that second look, if we need to take one, at your business method related patent. So there's all upside in it. As Anish said, very inexpensive, very quick, beats going to court by a country mile. And if you're a manufacturer or if you're just an entrepreneur who's concerned about someone else's software-related patent and you want to bring that business method type proceeding because the patent implicates a business method, get that done quickly. You can find out whether you can go into competition in that area or whether the patent's good and you just can't do that without a license. So I think there's actually all upside in that business method provision. And I don't see the legislation as being anything that necessarily all harms software patents, but it does give us the tools to make sure that the software patents we're granting are high quality, high caliber, truly defined invention, and so that we're not making mistakes in granting software patents on trivial ideas or mere software engineering or mere, you know, regular engineering type advances, and which frankly we should not be granting those kinds of patents.
And maybe because we've run out of time, we can just, again, lift up for a moment for the American economy. We are increasingly, whether it be software enabled, I'm particularly focused on a lot of those areas in my capacity as CTO, healthcare, IT, smart grid, learning technologies. It is increasingly true that we have a global marketplace and that protected intellectual property in the United States makes for great exports. And one of the benefits of all of this is that somewhere around the world, someone is inventing a learning system that allows every young child to understand algebra in a timely manner. somewhere around the world, someone's going to invent an energy management system that would allow my family and yours to lower our energy bills without reducing our quality of life. Somewhere around the world, someone's going to invent a better way for us to think about high quality, low cost healthcare by keeping our families and loved ones on the meds when they need to and to get the prevention and wellness checks as a result. Our challenge is whether or not those inventions will happen in the United States and we will be exporters to a global market, or they will happen elsewhere and we'll find ourselves importing the products and services of the future that solve some of these biggest challenges. So that's really the heart of this, from my point of view, the economic benefits of all of this. We all want to thank you for your time, Dave. Any final words to give a little love to the team?
Well, first of all, this has been a wonderful discussion. Happy to come back if we have more questions for some future session. Just to echo Anisha's points, you know, this legislation at the end of the day leapfrogs the U.S. intellectual property system from being a system that fundamentally was based on 1836 technology, and we were making the best of it and we were managing to patch it together. We have now leapfrogged the rest of the world. The United States of America now has the world's only truly 21st century patent system that champions innovation, that's friendly to innovators, inventors, that is transparent, that is open, that will, as Anish says, enable great products and services to get into the marketplace, put Americans to work, create better solutions for our country. And that's the way that we need to look at this legislation and move forward with it. Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us at Open for Questions at the White House. Thank you, Anish Chopra and David Kaplos, and hopefully you'll join us again soon.